welcome to the Community Rewatch Podcast. I'm Jen, your host through all things Greendale. And today we are finally at one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic episode of Community. That's right, we're talking about Remedial Chaos Theory. And you might have noticed that I said we, and I am doing a podcaster team up this week. And I'm very, very excited because two thirds of Welcome to Greendale is here with us. Michael and Jillian, hello.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, welcome. Hi. Welcome. I'm so excited. It's so fun because we're like on the same season three schedule at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I'm seeing it, I saw you release Competitive Ecology. Yeah. That's what comes out.
Well, I love that, like, we just took breaks at the same time and we're like, okay, we're gonna release, you know, some bonus episodes, we're gonna take a break for the holidays, and then we just dove right back in. And I'm very excited because
I think that we started around the same time as you.
I think
like our podcast started like both November 2019. Makes sense. We're on the same.
We finally got on the same schedule. I'm so excited to talk with you both about Remedial Chaos Theory. Before we get into all of our questions, we're going to do what is customary here, which is a plot recap and then the community quotes of the episode. Because I have just abandoned the community quote of the episode and I've decided I need to pick at least two. This is a special episode. I've picked three because I can't choose and it's bad for me. Chels would yell at me because she's like ruthlessness, but I can't choose. This is a great episode. So plot is really simple though for this episode. Troy and Abed have a new apartment. They have a housewarming party. The entire study group decides to go to the housewarming party and the group orders pizza. And in order to decide who goes downstairs to pick up the pizza, Jeff decides to use a little Yahtzee die and basically pick someone to go and pick up the pizza based on what number he rolls. And as Abed says, he's now creating six different timelines. So we get to see what would happen if each member of the study group went to go pick up the pizza. And as you might imagine, this is Community, so chaos ensues. And that's essentially what you missed on Community. The community, that's it. That's the whole episode. Here's the community quotes of the episode. I just love this one so much because of the delivery. This is Jeff and Troy, which is, guys, what does a pregnancy test look like? Like a thin piece of plastic with a thing on the end of it? Okay, so this is definitely a gun.
Troy.
This one literally made me laugh out loud today when I was rewatching, which is Jeff and actually Pierce, which normally doesn't happen in my community quotes of the episode, where Jeff says, Abed surely just had a nervous breakdown, and Pierce goes, more like a nervous, and Jeff finishes, breakdown. I know, I didn't say it on purpose.
He should have.
You should have let him say it.
I know.
Nervous breakdown is perfect.
It's a perfect.
I will hear no argument.
It's perfect. It's so perfect. And I love the like little facial expressions of like, look, you walked right into that one, Jeff. And then this one is just so great because of Allison Brie's delivery of, Jeff, you crafty jackrabbit. And I don't know why I think that that's just a funny insult for her to have. But it's a funny insult for her to have. So there you go. There's your community quotes of the episode. So since this is both of your first time on the show, I'd like to hear a little bit about each of your community journeys. So how did you hear about and fall in love with the show?
I'm going first.
Yeah,
I guess I was first. So I was vaguely aware of Community during season one as one of the shows that was running on NBC at the time, and I'd heard from a few people, hey, check this show out, it's not bad. And then someone that I worked with after Modern Warfare was like, you gotta watch this show, it's hilarious. Like, they just did a whole episode about and it was crazy. And I was like, what's the show about? And they're like, no, it's not a community college, but like they just did this whole paintball episode. And I was like, okay, that sounds weird, I'll check this out. And so I went and downloaded season one and just started watching season one and got hooked very quickly, caught up to the paintball episode and was like, okay, this was brilliant. Like everyone else, started the wait for season two. And during that time, told Julian, hey, you got to watch this show. I'm going to start watching this show from now on.
And I didn't even necessarily like go back and watch season one. I don't remember when I first watched season one, but yeah. Michael started watching season two and I was around. Mm-hmm. So I joke that I kind of initially became a fan of Community through osmosis. Like I was just in the room where yeah. it was happening.
You were in the room where it happened, if I may.
Absolutely, you may. Always. Yes. It's so like, so I can't remember exactly what episode or what got me to actually start to fully pay attention. But somewhere in season two, I became an actual fan who was watching and not just like on my phone or reading while it was yeah. in the room with me. So, yeah.
yeah. That's so fun. There's part of me that like, I got caught up pretty quickly after season one. Like it was the finale that I famously, Jamie told me like, here's the spoiler. Now go watch the show. And I'm like, okay, so I will. But like, I was pretty close. I just kind of, there's part of me that like wishes I would have been around to watch Modern Warfare live. Cause I think that that's like, obviously contemporary American poultry was like the big first big departure. But yeah, when you're like, yeah, it's, there's a whole action paintball homage. Wait, I thought that the show was about a study group yeah, a study in group Spanish.
Knowledge. Yeah.
It is, but also it's but. Not.
Well, also there's weird Greendale times.
So. Yeah.
And like I said, I had that friend who was like hyping up the paintball episode. So I was like, okay, I'll give the show a shot. That sounds wild. Let me think yeah. what the show's about. And I was hooked probably like two episodes in because yeah. Duncan is the best character on the show. And I was like, I'll come back for whatever Duncan's doing.
Yeah.
Britta's trial. It was one of the funniest things I had ever seen. Like that scene ruined me. And I was like, yeah. well, I guess I'm here. And then I got to Contemporary American Poultry. It's like, this is my favorite show now. I'm yes. not. And then finally, the paper. Yes, great. What are we doing? I'm never going back.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that. I love when people have very early on community journeys. I mean, we were talking before we recorded about the notion of, you know, watching the show live. And I remember watching this season live and all the ups and downs and weirdness and fandom and fun stuff and taking years off of our lives because we didn't know if the show was going to come back. And like
stress.
It was stressful. I think I just find it so funny. And I know that like your podcast premise is that you watch it with someone who's never seen it and doesn't know anything about like all the drama and the things that went on behind the scenes, which there's a part of me that like as it went on Netflix and as people started to keep finding, I'm like, I kind of wish I could erase some of that and just go back and watch things fresh. Cause I think that, I don't know if I'd have a different opinion on things. So it's very interesting.
Well, it's one thing that we've talked about a lot. Like we're not going to tell Sadia any of the behind the scenes stuff. So like, yeah. we're very curious what her opinions of like season four will be
yeah.
with no context of, you know, there's a new showrunner, there's all this yeah. drama, people are leaving the show. Like yeah. she won't know any of that. She'll just have the episodes.
Yeah. yeah.
And I'm very curious how like that'll color season four for her going in or,
yeah.
or seasons five and six, like not knowing and not having any connection to the drama we were all going through.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also have very clear memories of this season, this episode particularly, because I keep mentioning that like, maybe we all saw different stuff, but like in the build up to season three, this episode is one of the episodes they showed footage from. Or like image from and absolutely the shot of Troy coming into the apartment and it being on fire.
Do you remember
was one of
that?
The things huh. was one of the things that was in like Entertainment Weekly as a like Community's coming back. Here's a screen grab. And I was like, why is an apartment on fire? What's happening?
I don't remember that.
I remember it so distinctly that this goodness. Was one of the previews. Britta in the cage was one
yes
of the
I do remember Britta in the cage being part of the previews. I don't remember
it was, it was part of the preview package. This like the fire and there was some other image where I was like, what the hell is happening on this show now?
Michael also worked at Blockbuster then, so he had like access R.I.P. to all of the entertainment mags. Like
I did, yeah
so
I definitely remember buying was it TV Guide this season where they won like they won something and there were exclusive TV Guide covers. And I worked at a grocery store at the time. So like before work, I would be like looking because there was one where it was Joel and like Yvette and Gillian and Allison. And they had like a pin, like it was like they had won like best show or best
like fandom fan or something. Favorite.
Fan or favorite. Yes. Like that. So I was like, here's like the special community cover. And I kept that magazine through a lot of different moves. But I remember like vague when we get to like Urban Matrimony, which is coming soon. I very vividly remember coming back because there was that huge gap between regional holiday music and Urban Matrimony. Yep. And also what I remember very vividly was all of us were very concerned because Joel had lost a lot of weight or looked like he had lost a lot of weight between like the two things. We were like, what happened? It's been 3 months. I guess a lot has happened. Like, it's like, I remember it being so stressful for them too.
Yeah.
I very vividly do remember as we're going to get into this, I don't have it because obviously he deleted his account and I cannot remember if it comes up again on my time hop, maybe I'll find it. I do remember tweeting Dan Harmon about this episode before when I read the episode summary, and I remember him responding something to like the degree of like, yes, that's kind of the feel for it, because I was like, it sounds like a choose your own adventure novel. Like, am I right in that, Dan? And he's like, I think he responded and I don't remember the response, but it was something along the lines of like, sort of. And because that was what I thought when I read this episode summary, I was like, interesting. Like, how's that going to work?
God, can you imagine if we're making Community now, there would 100% be a Bandersnatch episode.
Oh my gosh, there would
100% be a choose your own adventure episode of Community.
What if that's the movie? What if that? What if
the movie's gonna be in VR?
Yeah, I mean,
the movie will be in VR. There'll be an app. Like, the movie's just us all attending a college.
Yes, exactly. We all like show up, and it's like, okay, now do this thing. Like,
all right, now paintball.
QR code. Now paintball.
And John wandering the halls. He will kill you.
Oh my gosh. Well, Remedial Chaos Theory is one of the most. It's considered one of the best Community episodes. If not the best by many people, it was.
It's the best episode.
Okay.
It's not my favorite episode. I'll admit that, but it's the best episode of Community, right? We're all agreed.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the thing that I think is important, because we've talked about this before in other podcasts when we discuss things like there is a difference between favorite and best. Like, objectively, you can have one be different than the other. Your favorite doesn't have to be the best episode, but this one for me is my favorite episode, only edged out slightly. It only edges out Conspiracy Theories very slightly, because like that episode is just pure perfection to me too. Also,
Chris, love Conspiracy Theories.
Chris McKenna. Like, you know, and so like objectively, yeah, this was unfortunately lost the Outstanding Comedy Writing Emmy, but it was nominated for Outstanding Comedy Writing that year. And so I kind of wanted to get you guys your thoughts on like why you think it ends up on so many best of lists.
It is in part. So I think part of the reason is Community obviously chances. But I think that the reason why some of maybe the wilder chances don't make it and this one does is because it's still very grounded in reality.
Yeah.
And it ends up being a character study more than a wild adventure.
Yeah.
And so I think that whenever people are coming at the perspective of looking at TV, whenever you're making those lists, a lot of the times they're mostly looking grounded in the characters as opposed to how wild things can be. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why, like, right, we get to see how the group works whenever you remove a piece of it each time. And that's not something you get to have in a lot of television shows, period. It's just not something you get to see. Like, here's 5 minutes of a life and what happens when you remove one of these pieces at a time from the life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also think too, a big part of why this episode, right, is because, I mean, it's a great show. knocking. It's a great show at the height of its powers, an episode that does no wrong, and an episode that so perfectly encapsulates what the show is. Like, mm-hmm. Community at its heart has always been a sitcom that is interested in the meta of sitcoms, mm-hmm. right? It's as much a show about television as it is a television show about a community study group.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sometimes very interesting. There are the sitcom episodes of Community, right? Where, like, you know, where people are like, so how's Community? And you're like, I don't know. I mean, season one has a lot of really good sitcom episodes, but also show them Modern Warfare, because everyone always is like, well, this is like the show. This is what the show becomes and what it really is, right? Yeah. I think season two and season three are that perfected. Mm-hmm. Season three especially, and this episode is it at its pinnacle. It is a sitcom show with a sitcom premise of the episode. Two of the friends have a housewarming party at their new apartment. That's a sitcom staple. There you go. Mm-hmm. You've got your wacky cast of characters, but then it's also a meta episode about storytelling and the nature of character and the nature of television, and saying, you know, oh, well, one of our characters is interested in alternate timelines, so now here's a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. If we take out one character, here's how the rest of the episode goes.
Yeah.
And here's, you know, it's the cultivation. There's some TV shows or some episodes of TV that are those shows. They are just, if somebody's like, well, what's the show about? There is an episode you can show them that is the show at its peak. And Remedial Chaos Theory is Community at its peak. Like, it's the show.
Yep. Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think it's the importance that we talked about, and we talk about a lot, and we'll talk about more as the show continues to develop homages and storytelling and all of that jazz. But the best episodes of this show are always the ones that take an homage or take some sort of trope and flip it on its head, but are grounded in the characters. And that's what makes it work, because without that, it's just a puff of smoke. Like, it's just something that looks really cool or sounds really cool. But this works on so many levels because it is an individual and it's a group-centric character study. Like, that's what's so great about it, without trying, without like saying, this is a group. This is a story about the group. Here's this episode. See how all of these people do these things. I mean, you have the Winger speech replaced with an Abed speech at the end, but it's essentially this idea of like all of these characters play certain roles. And yeah, if you had to introduce someone to Community, you could literally pinpoint, this is every single character's role in this group, and get it like from this episode, which I think is so great. And it's consistently takes like the best elements too of each of the characters. Like, it doesn't fall into sometimes what it does, which is taking, you know, Annie to an extreme or regressing a certain character or doing all this. It is presenting them in their best and worst lights without making them completely out of character to do so. And that's what's so fun about it. And you watch the whole progression of the episode is just so brilliant because it keeps building on each other. And every scene, and I was thinking about that as I was rewatching, because I kind of forgot the progression of like, oh, so this starts in this timeline and then it builds and then it builds and then it builds. But it really is just, and it's a 20-minute episode. Like, it's so tightly written.
22 minutes of American television.
It is.
Which 21 tight. And change, I think, actually, yeah.
And you can, honestly, it is funny, without the commercial breaks, you feel the speed of it even more.
Yes, yeah.
Like, was one of the things that, like, hit me watching in the rewatch.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, a matter of minutes.
It's very interesting, because this is the first time I've watched this episode on Netflix, and I have previously streamed it on Hulu, and Hulu puts the commercials in. And it's interesting that it did feel very different this time than like so watching it on Hulu. It still feels normal.
Yeah.
It feels like the show. It feels like the episode. And this time I was like, oh, they are breezing through this. And I was like, no, they're not. There's just no commercial breaks to break this up.
You have like the little musical beat that you're like, oh yeah, that was going to be like, that's the commercial that it was supposed to be right there. But it's just like, it's so...
one of the rare episodes of television too, that like almost needs the commercials.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking that,
to like breathe. Yeah.
almost need them. Like the, and you can tell that they very clearly plotted out, like, again, it's the peak of television and the peak of like meta television. Like the show even goes, yeah, okay, commercial break. Not because we have to, because it's television. Mm-hmm. You need it.
Yeah.
That was another thing that I actually did feel. And I hadn't thought about the fact that we used to watch it on Hulu with commercials.
Yeah.
But like, I almost did miss those commercials, that moment, those like, the chance to reflect in between some of the moments that happened.
Yeah.
And so it made it feel even tighter and faster and like more bam, 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 bam.
It was so rapid fire. And like, you don't get that pause between, especially because at a certain point with that today, like I was even thinking like before recording, I was like, wait, whose timeline was that? Like, which one was that? Like, you very vividly remember, like, this is the one where Troy leaves, like, you know, but like the other ones in between, you're like, oh, I needed that break, because they do build on each other, but they have very similar beats that you're like, okay, wait, what's happening now? Because it is the same. That's the risk that this episode took, was like, it's the same story over and over. It's Jeff, you are now creating six different timelines. Of course I am, Abed, over and over and over again. But there are these different beats throughout and these little different plot threads that you're like, oh my God, like how it was, it's such a tightly written episode. And honestly, not even just in Community, but one of my favorite episodes of TV of all time. Like it's just that good.
Yeah.
And frequently ranks there. I mean, it frequently ends up on best of decade, best of television lists. And there's a reason for that. It, like I said, it's the best episode of one of the best comedy shows in the history of television. There's no way you can't put it on the list of the best episodes of television of all time. Like,
exactly.
It just is.
And I mean, like, while this isn't a bottle episode necessarily, it has those beats and feels to it. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on like, for me, that's how it feels a little bit. Does it give you the feeling of one? And if so, like in what ways? Because it doesn't have all of the feelings of a bottle episode.
I totally think of it as a bottle
episode. 100%.
Because even like one of my favorite bottle episodes and another famous one, right? Like Friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Like its famous bottle episode. You still have people that are exiting and entering the room and everything like that. So it's not like they're all trapped.
Yeah.
But you're in this space, and this is the space that it's happening in. And even though we go to the bathroom, like, it's right there, right? Yeah. And they do a lot of things to make you know that it's not far away.
Yeah.
Like there's lots of walking and everything. So I don't know. I think of it as a bottle episode.
Absolutely. I do. Yeah. And it's funny too, that like Community goes back, like, you know, Community has one of, you know, the most often referenced bottle episodes in cooperative calligraphy.
Yeah.
But then of course, again, Community taking everything about television and everything that it is perfects the bottle episode in Remedial Chaos Theory in a way that you don't even notice it's a bottle episode.
Yeah, it's almost like, and it's weird, it's very interesting because it's almost like it's like seven different little bottle episodes, because you have those little escalating conflicts in each timeline and it's all confined and it all comes to a head, and then you have like this overarching prime timeline one. But it is really fun to watch these characters, because like, again, this is proof that the characters didn't need to be going on crazy adventures to be interesting or funny. Like they were sitting rolling a die and they were themselves. Like it was, you could understand exactly who they were, what their motivations were, what made them tick.
I was actually just thinking that I was like, man, this show Community is Community perfects the bottle episode, because cooperative calligraphy, in like the show knows how to do a bottle episode and how to, like, because, you know, effectively the entire, you know, point of a bottle episode, I mean, from a television making standpoint, the point of a bottle episode is to save money on sets this week. But really Community takes it as a way of like, we're like, we're going to put characters in a place that they can't leave. It builds mm-hmm. instant conflict. Mm-hmm. And the cleverness of this episode to repeatedly just decide, okay, wait, one of them can leave.
Mm-hmm.
What yeah. is that dynamic? Okay, now one of them leaves. Yeah. What is that dynamic? It's just...
Yeah, because you don't really see that in any other episodes. Like, you see separate storylines and you see, you know, this week it's a Jeff and Annie caper and Brenna and Troy got their thing, or Oppen and Troy are doing their thing. But, like, you never really see an instance in the show again where, like, one character leaves and it changes the dynamic or it changes the plot. Okay, now one other character leaves, but all the rest stay and, you know, have that dynamic. So it is really fun to watch them do that because, again, they do such a good job of understanding what would happen at this point in the show, 3 years in, you know these people by now. What would happen if Pierce left the room, or if Shirley left the room, or if Britta left the room? You know, like, and it's believable because you're like, okay, so this is exactly what this group does when one character isn't there, because we have to believe that they exist in a world. And good TV always makes you feel like these characters exist outside of the 30 minutes that we see them. Mm-hmm. So this must happen at some point, like in their lives. They must all be together and be waiting on one character to come back in, or, you know, one character leaves and this is what they actually do. So I mean, I love it. It's just such a tightly written episode. It's such a great episode that proves just mini escalations within the timelines and this overall kind of just examination of these characters and who they are and what their motivations are. So our first listener question is from Matt. I'm pretty sure this is Community's Matt, who did Remedial Chaos Theory with you all.
Yes.
We love Matt.
Do you want to know the answer to this question?
What's the best timeline outside of the prime timeline is Matt's listener question.
Ooh. Okay, look, I have to refer to my notes that I wrote to, like, try and decide what it is. I actually...
So, I know off the top of my head what the best
timeline is. You know what you...
What's the best timeline?
Yeah, so the best timeline is, I'm just trying to remember who actually leaves.
Tell me what happens. I have my notes here.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I was thinking that too.
Is it, I'm pretty sure it's Annie.
She's the first one.
No, she's the first one. It's not Annie, it's Pierce, right? That's where Troy and Britta end up together?
Yes. Yeah,
that's the best okay, good.
That's my vote for the best timeline, too, honestly.
I like that. Yes, because there is... is that... That's the one where Britta and Troy have that good conversation in the bathroom, right?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. That's my favorite one. I get everything... Mm-hmm. This is what happens when Pierce leaves. I get everything that I want.
In particular, I... love that conversation mm-hmm. between Britta and Troy.
Yeah.
I think it's a great conversation. I think it's one of the best conversations in the episode. It also really starts to pull out this undertone of, or this current that you mm-hmm. see from like jump of Jeff and Troy, mm-hmm. like in this, competitiveness that Jeff is feeling, and mm-hmm. Him being threatened by Troy.
Yeah.
And sort of puts it to light, like, and Britta being able to say, this is why this is happening.
Yeah. This isn't the first instance, but I love one of my favorite threads in this whole show is the idea of Troy being a better leader than Jeff is, because he doesn't have the ego that Jeff does. And he's a natural born leader with a good heart. And this is like not the first instance that we see that. I think one of the best episodes, obviously, is Mixology Certification, to like prove that Troy is different than his Jeff and Britta and the way that they view the world and the way that he sees the world. And I love that conversation because it's just such a good example of how both of those characters have grown. And like you said, Jillian, I love the beginnings of Jeff versus Troy's leadership style and how Jeff is being threatened by this idea that Troy is growing up and he's no longer like the jock kid that he was, that Jeff could just tell things to and he looked up to. I think after Mixology, Troy's kind of a little bit less, you know, in awe of Jeff like he was blindly before. And I love that because I love Troy. And I think that his leadership, his growth, his arc is so important. And it's obviously a huge part of season 3. And we're going to get into that more in season three, but I love the little priming too of this honesty between Britta and Troy, which we really don't see a lot of their dynamic before this. And we obviously see more of it after, but I love that. I
honestly argue that if you're watching, like after it happens, if you watch, they start laying Britta Troy breadcrumbs in season one.
Yeah. Oh,
breadcrumbs get laid in season one and season two. Like if you're progressive, like if you're just watching and you notice, it'll be little moments.
Yeah.
But there are actually,
they're also huge moments, like the entirety of the dancing. Like
yes.
The dancing. He's having to repeatedly ask her to stop staring at his junk. I'm going to need you to keep your eyes
My eyes up here.
And then a year later, when they end up in acting class together, it's him all over her.
Oh my gosh.
So like it was one of those things, they upped it in season three, but like it's been honestly been there.
Yeah. And one of my favorites that we're going to come to, and I can't wait to talk about, which is Origins of Vampire Mythology, like that idea of, again, Troy. And I like this because so much of the beginning of season three, which I've talked about before, and even season two, I think Troy is hilarious. And a lot of his funniest lines that we've quoted so far as the quotes of the episode have been him insulting Britta. Just because like you're the AT&T of people is never not funny. well, you're the opposite of Batman. You know, but I love that we get this conversation because we're going to start to see that like sweetness really continue to develop and like that support. And I really love that. I love that. That journey, well, that is a good answer for that time.
Say, and you even talked about how you like whenever you did our pedagogy, like, Troy is very much angling to be Britta's partner.
I was like, oh.
Something else that I find really interesting about the Jeff and Troy butting heads thing, and it's something that's been threaded throughout the show. Mixology Certification really highlights it, and then we start to see it in season three as they butt heads more. The show does a very interesting thing, and I wonder if it was conscious, but between those two, there's a very, very interesting dichotomy in like a generational thing between the idea of coolness for Gen X and the idea of coolness for millennials.
Troy and
Abed are fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, they are.
They are cool. And like Jeff is cool from the generation before. Mm-hmm. Jeff is cool in the 90s as an adult. And like millennials, myself, in 10 in the 90s would have been like, oh man, he's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got a leather jacket. He seems cool. He's got a trainer. He seems smart. He's got a sport coat.
Yeah.
But like by 2009, like Troy and Abed are cool.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to see this idea of Troy and Abed's like sense of adulthood, their own apartment. You know, like they play at being adults sometimes, but they also just have fun and do whatever they want and reclaim continue to like have their innocence, but be very, very aware of stuff that's going on in a way that like, obviously Jeff keeps making fun of them for being children, but they're not children. They just because we're awesome doesn't mean we're not adults.
Yelling things like that will never not be funny to me.
But it's also such a thing of like, yes, for our generation, it is so true of like watching the Gen Xers be like, you guys are lame. Are you guys still playing with toys? Yes, we are.
We are. And they're awesome.
Why are you so angry and drunk all the time?
Why are you not playing with toys?
Yeah.
Well, and like the idea too of, you know, that piggybacking off of that about Jeff's whole journey has to be opening his heart and learning to care. And that is a thing that is okay as an adult. It doesn't mean that he's less than. I love that conversation with Troy and Britta because Britta tells Troy, like, you're not guarded. Like, that's a good thing. You've got that going for you. That's actually a good way to live. Do you know how Jeff lives? Like, he has his hair products like under a safe. Like, I don't know what's in there because he's guarded. But like this idea of, you know, that continues to be a thing that develops of Jeff being guarded and jaded and cynical and thinking like that's how you're an adult. That's how you have to live and constantly being taught like that is actually not a good way to live. Yeah. Troy and Abed may seem silly sometimes to people, but the way that Troy lives is so earnest and he loves people earnestly. And that's what makes him a good leader and a good person, is that people want to be around someone who will not judge them for having fun, who will join in on the fun. And like, it's just so refreshing to see that dichotomy in leadership of these two different types of leaders, and the show essentially arguing like, Troy's got the heart of a hero. Like, that's, Jeff is the main character of the show, and he doesn't always get it right. In fact, there's a lot of things that Troy does better, and better as a leader for the study group. And you start to see that, and it's so great. Speaking of Troy, actually, this episode introduces us to the GIF that summed up 2020. Every time I see that, I'm like, I want to respond. Have you watched Community? Do you know where this is from?
The answer is no.
No, I know.
A lot of them don't. We talked about this on our episode about this, We talked about the fact that this particular episode, Remedial Chaos Theory, is such a part of, like, just general pop culture and specifically internet culture.
Yes.
Like, there are reaction GIFs from this episode that are integral to communication and to everyone's understanding of how we're all feeling for people who have never seen the show. Like people who have never even watched an episode of Community reference This Is the Darkest Timeline all the time. And like, that's from this episode.
Yes.
Like, this show, this is the episode where the show hits complete like pop culture ubiquity, and it's amazing.
Cultural touchstone, honestly, that will just be. And it is funny because like, I have seen people that I've known that have used Community GIFs like over and over, like reaction ones. And I, you know, even my friend Jen, who is starting to get in this show, she like sent me a GIF and she's like, I know who these characters are now so that I can send this to you. And I was like,
Sadia, whenever we recorded the episode, went, I finally know what this GIF is from.
Yes.
Because she, you know, had seen it obviously before we ever started this podcast. But then, of course, 2020, this GIF came up.
Yes, a whole lot.
And she was like, I kept wondering where and when Troy just walked into things on fire and why it was happening. And I'm here now.
You're like, I get it now. I understand it now. There's so, and it's so much funnier too in context. I won't lie. I've watched this episode so many times. I have seen this particular scene so many times. And every single time I am just like cackling at Troy and staring at Torg, and the Torg staring back at him and is like growing panic. It's just the best thing.
That freaky troll.
And we keep having, we have this conversation sometimes about the idea of like, how do you know something has really like become a cultural phenomenon and isn't just popular right now, right? Yeah. And the answer is whether or not people who have no concept of it are aware of its references, right?
Like people will say, you know, you made me an offer I can't refuse.
There are people who probably have never even heard of The Godfather who know that phrase as just being a phrase, right?
Yeah.
People know who The Rock is who have maybe never watched him wrestle a match before. Mm-hmm. They just know that he's The Rock, right? And like, this is one of those things where, you know, for as often as we feel, as we felt like Community was this little engine that could, that all 12 of us were watching, and we wanted to stay on the air, and, you know, we're all so excited about the show finally being rediscovered by people and stuff. But man, like, the last 4 years have proven that, you know what? Community, cultural milestone. Because there's no way to even have conversations on the internet without referencing Community with people who have never seen an episode.
Yes, it's so true, and it's so good. And I'm so glad that people have, like, I've seen people talk about, like, I wanted to know where this was from, so I went back, and now I watch the show, and now I love the show, and I'm like, oh, so good. But this particular, like, that particular scene is from the timeline in which Troy leaves the room to go get the pizza. So this has been talked about quite a bit. I'm sure you guys have talked about it on your episode, but I want to hear a little bit of your thoughts of like, why do you think this timeline is the most chaotic? There is nothing remotely close to it that happens in any of the other timelines.
Well, the easiest answer is because Troy doesn't find the gun in this timeline.
So that's true.
Everyone was at risk.
Yeah.
Because no one finds the gun. And he's not there to protect
the gun. We only find the gun in the first timeline.
That's true. I guess that's true. I guess Annie is around to like make sure that nothing happens. But also she takes the purse with her every time she goes to check on Jeff. So I'm like, you're taking
apparently anyway. She has medicine in it. I don't know.
That's what we determined last night.
She has a whole med kit in her purse just in case.
Let's be real. It's a Mary Poppins bag. She just
to carry.
My theory is that she was like, I'm gonna check Jeff's head, and if I don't think there's anything I can do, I'm just gonna put him down.
But I think that this one might be chaotic because I think at this point, and arguably from mixology certification kind of on, Troy, while still being like the adorable human that he is also in part a grounding force, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like there are a lot of easy ways to say it. It's just, he wasn't there to distract Britta from whatever. But I think in part is that he's a grounding force. So mm-hmm. he ends up having some sort of conversation with somebody, no matter who leaves. Mm-hmm. And in this one, he's not there to do that.
It's true.
It all just kind of goes and melts. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. Like, I think one of the things that people, you know, talked about, I think after this episode was like the idea that, you know, Troy does bring some sort of, yeah, like grounding force to it. Like when Troy's not there, like things just happen to erupt, because for as silly as he might be, we do see he is a leader. He is an integral part of this group. What is really interesting though, to me, that I was thinking about earlier today is that we see very external chaos like happen, like literally Pierce gets shot. Like there's fire. There's literally just things happening. It's the wildest one. But what I think is even more interesting potentially is that even though it's not erupting in external chaos, Abed's is just as chaotic. It's emotional chaos. And that mm-hmm. I was struck by today, because I was like, you know, I always talk about like Troy leaving means that like, you know, Troy's really a leader. He's an integral part of the group. Like he grounds it. He holds it together somehow. And then when he's not there, all hell breaks loose. Right. But when Abed's not there, all hell breaks loose, just yes. in a very different way.
In a very different way. It's a more
He's the soul. He's the group's like heart.
Yeah.
And when Abed's gone, the group becomes heartless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And destroys each other.
Yeah.
And Troy is, like we said, the group's sort of like stable foundation. And when he's not there, everything is on shaky ground. Everything falls apart. They can't, like, they're in danger.
Okay, well, actually, okay, now that as we're talking about it, I wonder if I've assigned them backwards.
Hmm.
Okay, so here's what I'm, if Troy is actually the heart and Abed is the grounding force, because...
Cite your work. I need to see. Show your work.
Okay.
Work so this out for me.
I have to do it from Abed's because Troy's is just so wild. Troy. That, like, but yeah. So from right, Abed leaves. And for example, Shirley and Britta get into the altercation. Mm-hmm. And Abed isn't there in any way to sit there and try and like call anybody in his stoic way on mm-hmm. what they're doing. Because mm-hmm. that's the thing that Abed does. He'll mm-hmm. like in his stoic way, be like, what you're essentially tell them that they're being ridiculous in some way.
We already ordered pizza. Like,
yeah. You
know. Best line in the episode for me personally is we ordered real pizza. He's going to throw hands.
Yeah. Like he's not there to somehow say something with Troy and Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not there to kind of serve as a rationalization towards any of those scenarios. Mm-hmm. He's not there to make an awkward comment about Jeff and Annie making mm-hmm. out in the kitchen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. he is not there mm-hmm. to sort of rationalize and bring back to earth the behaviors that they're letting ramp up.
Mm-hmm. All right, hang on. Yeah. We're going to tag team this thing here because actually you're talking and it's helping me. I got something here. Here's what I got. It's heart and mind.
Yeah.
So it's the heart.
Yeah.
And Abed's the mind.
Yeah. I was thinking that too.
Without Troy, they become heartless and anything can happen to them, mm-hmm. and things get dark.
Yes.
But without Abed, they cannot think. They don't think. Mm-hmm. They just feel. They just react. They lash out.
Which is literally all of their problems.
And that's what they do. They just react. It's all lizard brain reactions to each other. They're not considering each other. Mm-hmm. Because when Abed's around, they actually frequently will go to do something and then they'll remember Abed's there and they'll think about it and they won't do it. Yeah. Abed makes them all think and consider each other. Yes. They don't do it when he's not there.
Yeah,
Troy is their heart, and when he's taken out, things can get dark. I mean, we see it on a meta level after season 4, mm-hmm. season 5 and 6, the school is literally dark.
Yes. That is it, because I was thinking through that, like
heart
some
mind.
Of the things that heart and mind, because a lot of heart the things mind. That, you know, Jeff constantly references, like, Abed, you're a computer. You guys got this. I'm so proud of your breakthrough live happening.
This is the point of our 10 years of marriage.
I love it. But yeah, it's
this moment.
it's so true. Abed, at the very least, like the problem in Abed's timeline is that everyone says something that they regret. Like that is the point. They all say bad things to each other. And then literally when Abed comes in, it's not chaos. It's just dead silence. And like mm-hmm. everyone is like mad at each other in a very different way than like happens in some of the other, where there's just these little riffs.
They all said very thoughtless things to each other.
Yes. Abed's there to call them out gently. Abed's there to at least have someone to make some sort of reference of like, you know, in a TV show, this wouldn't be like, or do you know, like, and you know, even Abed in the timeline where, who goes to get the pizza when Jeff and Annie are in the bathroom and Pierce has the troll doll in front of Troy and says, like, Pierce comes to the realization that
it's Britta. Right?
Okay. Because she comes back
in the bathroom. Yes. So Jeff and Annie can be in the bathroom.
Okay. Yep, so like that moment where Abed is very like wide-eyed, but knows exactly what's happening and why Pierce is doing what he's doing. There's none of that to call out Pierce and Troy. There's none of the kind of like, for lack of a better term, robotic way that Abed would say, like, we're not eating your pies. Like, because Jeff is distracted. There's no way of like being, you know, him calling out like, maybe what is happening here? Like, you guys are in the kitchen.
awkwardly walking in.
Like, honestly, I'm like, out of all the things, I'm just like, you guys are it's not that big of an apartment. Everyone's
just, really not. They're right in front of them. This happens a lot on this show. Like in Intro to Knots, there are several conversations where I'm like, literally,
you're right there. Everyone can hear you.
Everyone can hear you, which I like that they play with, because he's talking trash about the professor and he walks up and goes, I heard you.
I heard every word of that.
Small apartment, bro.
It's not but that
yeah, like Abed isn't there to mm-hmm. like Abed isn't Help there regulate. To sit there and try and head Britta mm-hmm. off from her craving of the small pies.
Yeah.
There's
that's good. I like, good job, guys.
Heart and mind.
Heart and mind.
We did it.
Heart and mind. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that build upon other things in each of these timelines. Cause as different as they are, there are small building blocks and consistencies that happen. Jeff and Annie is a small building block that obviously gets brought up. Britta and Troy, Pierce tormenting, Shirley's baking. So let's just talk about how these things escalate and what they mean, because at the end of the day, none of those things are real. I mean, I guess the darkest timeline is real. But like none of those things, none of these things really happened, but all.
Here are the things that really happened.
Okay.
So the darkest timeline really happened mm-hmm. because that comes back later.
Yeah.
Pierce definitely told them about having sex with Eartha Kitt.
Yes.
Because he mentions it in competitive ecology.
Yes, you guys.
And Britta definitely smoked weed in front of Shirley because yes. she knows
it's about her police. Marijuana lighter.
Her marijuana lighter. Those yes. things absolutely yes. happened.
You guys, I do have to say that in regards to building, and it doesn't have any consequence really, but Pierce bringing up that he slept with Eartha Kitt made it funnier every single time.
Right? Because he does it a different way every single time.
I laughed.
And it's like, here's your, it's like, here's your sperm.
Not subtle at all.
No. Like, some of them are really funny because he just, like, he literally is trying too hard. And that's what makes it funny is, like, yep.
Yeah. That one doesn't have any consequence, but I just have to mention that it building it mm-hmm. is funny.
That is funny.
It's an interesting show because there are the only consequential things for the characters moving forward are the dancing, them living there. Annie should move in. You should move in here.
Yeah.
Like that, which is, I think, potentially hugely consequential mm-hmm. because, Abed makes that decision without even asking Troy.
Yeah. I like the way that Donald Glover played that as Troy, like the very slow, wait, what?
Yeah. Like huge decision that you're just making for us, mm-hmm. which becomes a major thing later in the season. And like the little things that we mentioned too. So but everything else, the escalations are really for us, the audience. They're not the actual individual characters.
They're not.
But I think it's to contextualize certain things about the characters mm-hmm. for us. The idea that Jeff is being super mean mm-hmm. to Troy because Troy is genuinely mm-hmm. a threat. And that mm-hmm. threat might be that, like, Troy may take Britta. Mm-hmm. at some point. Like, that's a real possibility. The idea that Jeff and Annie very much want to be together, but that might not be the best decision mm-hmm. for Jeff and Annie. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, the group is taking, like, Shirley doesn't know her mm-hmm. place in the group, really. And that Pierce is going to feel lonely and it's going to be looking for ways to be involved mm-hmm. more. Like,
yeah.
The escalations are there, but I think they're there to contextualize the characters for us as we move forward, but not the characters themselves moving forward. It's a very interesting approach to a character study.
I would say character study and showing us the depth of where things could go, even if in the prime reality, that's not where they are at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is so interesting because, I mean, again, as someone who is a fan of Jeff and Annie, this is the... like they do kiss, but never, it's not real. Like, it doesn't really happen in the real timeline. So the amount of space and time between, oh, this is the real thing versus the show being like, we know that you want this to happen, but it's not really happening. Like, but you know, like that idea.
Torture your shipper heart.
Yeah, it's fine. I like when you think back on it, you're like, oh, we got so many good moments. None of them really happened. The last time that they actually kissed was Pascal's. That was a long time ago. It's a long time in the real prime reality. But like the idea of like what you're saying, Michael, I think is spot on of the idea of like, this is helping us contextualize the characters. Like Pierce specifically, I actually really enjoy in this episode, even mm-hmm. when he's being terrible, because it does contextualize this idea of Pierce does miss Troy. Like he's mm-hmm. lonely. And I do like the decision at the in the prime timeline that he doesn't give him the doll, that he could have done that and that we saw that consequence in non-reality of like he wants to do it out of spite and then he chooses not to do it because he knows he could do it out of spite and then he
doesn't. And it's interesting for Pierce because for Pierce it's actually a really humanizing moment. We the audience get to see that Pierce is lonely without retreading mm-hmm. season two.
Yes, exactly.
So it's like here, Pierce is really lonely this season.
Yeah.
He's really beat up about it. Like mm-hmm. he really is going to miss Troy because now he's by himself.
Yeah.
But you know what? He knows that and he's going to deal with that. He's not going to make it the group's problem this year.
Yeah.
Well, and even
which again contextualizes things that happened to him later, digital estate planning mm-hmm. and his entire relationship with Gilbert.
Yeah. And like all it took for him to decide not to do the torture, the mental torture mm-hmm. was Troy saying, hey man, like him having a human moment with Pierce.
Yes.
And Pierce getting to feel that
Yeah.
However, that does not happen in the Prime timeline. In the Prime timeline, all it took was the police. In the Prime timeline, they don't have that conversation.
You know what? I thought that.
No, in the Prime timeline, Britta sings Roxanne.
And then everyone dancing, gets distracted, and then Pierce is like, nah, yeah, whatever.
Sorry, it I
is
got a, my timelines mixed up.
It's okay.
A beautiful moment. But in the Prime timeline, all it took was the police.
All it took.
Timelines mixed up there for a moment.
It's fair. I legitimately am like, wait, that did happen. You're like, no, I thought that it did too.
That didn't happen.
But I think that it's important because like I said earlier, this idea that like, again, Pierce being humanized without being excused, like not without the show being like, you should feel bad for him very heavy-handedly or like try and make excuses for what he's done. But it's the same with all these characters. Like you get to see them slowly develop. Like obviously in the very early on, you see Shirley not having an ability to have an identity outside of the group because it's Pierce, her, and these people who are sitting around making googly eyes at each other. And she's like, I don't know how to deal with that. Like, so I will deal with it the only way I know how, or the only way the show knew how, which is through baking. Or, you know, baking things is her identity. And that's one of the things that I will forever. We've been on these tangents and we could go on these tangents.
We do it on our show all the time about how
but we like
utterly the show wastes Shirley.
The show literally is meta saying you can't have baking things as an identity, but also we're going to give you baking things as an identity. Like
because we don't know what else to do with
we
you.
We don't know what to do with you. Show. Oh no, what should we do? But you know, I like the idea that we see those, like you're saying, the consequences and things build because we will see Jeff and Annie getting closer. We will see Troy and Britta getting closer. We will see this consequences of them living, you know, Troy, Abed and Annie living together. Like that's going to be a thing that we see more of. We're going to see more of Troy and Jeff's leadership and kind of butting heads and that sort of thing. What I do think is interesting is that I don't remember which timeline it's in, but in one of the timelines, Annie's almost ribbing Troy too, like because she's trying to be flirty with Jeff. It's like right after Shirley's.
Oh, hold on. I have it written down. Hold on. it is actually the Pierce timeline.
Yeah. It's,
it's the one where, because I actually wrote down that, I wrote down that Jeff and Annie were being a douche to Troy.
They are. Because
which
Jeff
is so weird.
The bunk beds.
Because
that Annie laughs.
Yeah, exactly. And I do love their delivery of, oh no, now we done it. Like, it's just such a weird thing because it doesn't really come back up again. Like we see them.
It's the only time that particular vibe happens in the episode.
Where it's like Annie trying to be cool with Jeff.
Yes. It's like them doing like their little band. Because we do see like the googly eyes. This is not the first or last time we will see Troy and Britta googly eyes, Jeff and Annie googly eyes in season 3. Sorry, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I really love Joel's wardrobe for season 3. So I really love the Jeff ensemble that we get in this. I don't know why they decided in season 3, like he's going to start wearing like more shirts with skinny ties, because I guess that was what Joel was wearing during the soup.
So much better than his clothes in season 1.
Oh, honestly, man. It's so true. But like the plaid and the checkered, very good guy. Good job, guys. And like that idea, like we'll start to see them build more to that. And it is interesting because that is the one little instance that caught me off of like, oh, this is the first time like we ever really see Annie kind of joking, making fun of Troy. And obviously it was like a plot point to get him to leave the table. But
I do now. And obviously, and it's not the first time we've seen Annie like do something that feels not necessarily Annie.
Yes.
Because she is trying to either impress or vibe with Jeff.
Yeah.
I would argue it's something that she does with all the boys she likes.
That's true.
Oh, that she does things to
She becomes very much like Vaughn. She becomes very much like Rich. She becomes very much like Jeff. She becomes very much like Troy. Like
It's
like the way at that point that she knows how to try and relate. Yeah.
Well, and we're going to see, like you said, it's a great episode for at least the character studies moving forward, because it is a way to address the things that we're going to see happen later on. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that I really hate that dad line that they throw. Also, can I just point out that I realized today that he didn't say no dad talk. He said less dad talk, which he said less. He said less, and that's a
which. I mean,
well, and, I mean, it's just like I mean, that's a whole
place for dad talk. I guess is the
that's
point.
A whole can of worms at the show. Again, going back to like this is the instance of the timeline in which Abed is not there to stop our characters from saying stupid stuff is this moment of like. Oof, yeah, Annie, no, don't say that thing. But yeah, like, I mean, we will see more of that. We will see more escalation of Troy and Britta, which I think this episode was nice because it gave us the googly eyes. It gave us them eating the pizza together. And
there were even crumbs for Jillian.
Oh, take my
you can take them wherever. Like, you're gonna get virtual systems analysis soon, so well, you're gonna.
I mean, think about it. At the end, like you should move in here.
Yeah,
huge crumb for you. Aww.
My crumb.
He didn't even ask his actual love.
What is it? Your boyfriend?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that this next one is interesting because it's not a question. It's Franz didn't really have a question per se, but he said, bring on the Jeff hate, which what are your thoughts on Jeff in this episode? Because especially I would love to hear your thoughts on the prime timeline, because a lot has been said about his absence in the prime timeline and what it might imply versus like Troy's timeline or like the other notably chaotic ones.
I mean, I think a part of it is there's a lot of things that Jeff tries to control or shut down, like mm-hmm. Roxanne playing, like Shirley baking, like lots of, there's lots of things that Jeff tries to, like I said, either have control or shut down, mm-hmm. that whenever you remove him from it, people are just allowed to be more relaxed.
Yeah.
Whether that's because they're not trying to impress him or he's not trying to impose this idea of cool upon mm-hmm. them or whatever. So it's one of those things where it's kind of that a lot of this show, it's like we've talked about, it's about him learning to open up, but it also in some ways it's about him learning to relax mm-hmm. and kind of go with a flow more.
Yeah.
Which he isn't good at.
No.
And so I kind of think that's mm-hmm. part of the reason why the prime timeline ends up being great
yeah.
is because you've removed somebody who feels they have the authority to kind of dictate how things are going.
Yeah.
And what's great about it, what's really touching about that final moment, even for all of them, including Jeff, is that if Jeff's not there, you know, no one is stopped from being themselves.
Yeah.
And so they are themselves. And what's beautiful about that is that then Jeff returns and sees this group of people being themselves, which is what he loves about mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
Like they aren't him. They're not jaded. They're not sad. They're not, they're not lonely. They're not terrified. Well, Pierce is terrified of being alone. And that's yeah. and that's why Jeff hates Pierce, because yeah. Jeff hates looking at Pierce and going, I'm him if I don't get it
yes.
together.
Yes. Yes. We said that in our last episode.
Like, don't get this together. I'm Pierce. And he hates yeah. that about Pierce. But even Pierce, when Jeff's not around, Pierce lightens us up. He lets mm-hmm. go. He lets them in. Mm-hmm. And he loves looking at them being themselves, because he is so incapable sometimes yeah. of being himself. Yeah. And so in the prime timeline, sending Jeff lets the party start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Jeff can come back and he can be a part of the party. Yeah, he's gonna be a part of the party the way he wants to be, which is standing next to the party, eating
weirdly just eating the pizza. I know. Weirdly eating, because it's a consistency in the timelines where he's eating the pizza. I'm like, is the what? What
Joel was just not eating carbs.
He's not eating carbs. Oh, what like, a monster.
I know. But it's true.
That's it. I think it's a beautiful. Actually, I don't hate Jeff Winger. I think Jeff Winger is a great character. He's the right character for this show.
Yeah.
And Joel plays him beautifully throughout the show's entire run.
Yeah.
And I like him in this episode. I think it works. I think it's a beautiful final moment. Like, it's what the group is. It's this cynical jerk and the who is one of seven lovable misfits, six lovable misfits and Pierce, depending on what we're talking about. And their dynamic together, making them a whole, the way that they build each other up, the way they make up for each other's shortcomings and reflect each other. And I think it's great. I think Jeff does need to leave to get the pizza, because if he doesn't, the party won't start.
Yeah.
But like, once the party starts, Jeff should be at that party.
Yeah.
Because even like, right, he always stops Britta from starting to sing Roxy.
I know.
Always. Which ends up being the catalyst. But also, I would argue that if Jeff was there, Annie wouldn't have gotten into it as goofily and with a, as a, like, not a band, like, with as free, which is much freedom. Sorry, I was trying to think of the right word. With as much freedom as she does, right? Because it's not her trying to get Jeff to get up and dance with her. It's her, like, just going up to Britta and Shirley, who are already all in on it.
And it creates a distraction for Pierce to throw away the
gift.
He clearly didn't. He clearly was already having second thoughts about.
Which is really funny when you watch the scene, because there is an inconsistency, because he throws it away and then Chevy goes back and takes it out again and then throws it away again. There's like a weird, if you watch Pierce in the background, because you're like, where's Pierce when this dancing is happening? He's like,
look, I'll go one better and say it's a ridiculous way of getting rid of it, because you threw the gift away in their trash.
I know.
Find it and open it. Why are you dumb? It
doesn't even fit fully in the trash can. It's just like,
throw it out the window or take it with you and hide it. Like, you threw it away in their trash and didn't notice this box.
It's hilarious. Like, but it's so true. Like, and to piggyback off of that, Jillian, like, and Shirley is allowed to be fully herself, that she can't be when Jeff is around, because Shirley immediately starts to identify herself with baking. And then as soon as the song comes on, she's like, ooh, like, wait, because she goes to get her pies and then she's like, oh, no, fun. And it's this idea of like, okay, Shirley and everyone can let loose. Note before I talk about why I love the fact that Jeff goes to get the pizza is that in the timeline where Britta goes to get the pizza and it's just quiet, and Troy goes, you guys are my best friends. Okay, I gotta get a drink. It's like the best, because when Britta is not there, like, there is no music playing. There is no
Britta's trying to get the party started, happening, you guys. And she's not a novice.
It's so great. But like, this episode, the end of it always reminds me of like Romantic Expressionism, where he spends this whole episode thinking that the study group needs him and they're in peril without him. And they must, it must be akin to what happened in Troy's timeline. Like, if I go to get the pizza, something crazy is going to happen. I'm going to have to save him with a speech. And then he goes and gets the pizza and he comes back up and everyone is fine. Like, no one, you know, in that episode, it's, no one's texted him with a crisis. They're handling stuff themselves. They've got this. And now Jeff comes back and he's like, see what happens when I leave you guys alone. And it's a good thing. Like, see what happens when I leave you guys alone. Nothing chaotic happens. You guys just have fun. And he does stand off to the side and observe, which is a very Jeff thing to do. Instead of getting,
that's how Jeff attends parties.
Well, we get the point driven home. And this is one of many times that we get the point driven home that the study group doesn't necessarily need Jeff.
Jeff
needs the study group.
Yes. And that's what I love so much about this escalation of the seasons, is that in from the very beginning of season three, Jeff tries to give some sort of speech about biology and this table is magic. And then it comes back around to bite him. And he's like, wait, I thought you said we've evolved past that. And he's like, like, you can almost see him go, my speech didn't work. Like, he's so confused by this idea.
That it's also funny because his speech worked.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's actually the problem, Jeff. Your speech didn't work. Again,
and now you don't like the words that you said, because they come back to haunt you. But yeah, the idea of this, and when we see it in, you can see, you know, for all of the qualms that people might have with season four, what I love is Jeff's speech at the end of season four. Like, I love that speech because, yes, he's been changed by them. He needs them. He loves them. And sure, they've been impacted by Jeff, but like, at this point, they are fine without him. Like, they're doing okay. They're solving their own problems.
It's really touching too, because the show, it's so brilliantly delivers on its premise. Jeff brings this community together in the first winger speech. And they don't, none of them need Jeff, but they did need the study group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And each of them is made better by the study group, but the group doesn't need Jeff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Jeff needs the group.
Yeah.
And the group needed each other. But the mm-hmm. group does not collectively need Jeff. It could yeah. survive without Jeff, which is, you know, Jeff is you know, constantly obsessed with the idea that, like, if I, and like, everyone needs me because I'm solving all their problems. And yeah, at first you kind of were, but then you fixed them. Like, you made them a group. Yeah. As a study group, they can fix each other. They don't mm-hmm. need you. So then the show becomes about the group fixing Jeff. Yeah. Season yep. three becomes yeah. about the group fixing Jeff. And that's, it's just, it's really nice to see a show take its premise and complete it and then mm-hmm. redefine the premise. I mean, you know, yeah. some of the, it's what some of the best television does.
Yeah. I agree. Abed does note something because he gives the winger speech essentially for this. So obviously Abed catches the dice in the air and gives a little speech about how chaos dominates enough of their lives and that there are constants, not vines, as Britta. Britta
let him finish.
Okay. I talked about this. Yes.
Ropes,
I talked about this when we did it. I talked about this when we did the episode. Let him finish.
It's one of my favorite
of like easy comedy for me. Anytime so anybody starts talking, I don't care what you're saying. If someone yells, "Let him finish," I'm dead on the floor. It's amazing.
I love it so much. But he gives this like little speech where he essentially basically says what everyone brings to the study group. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on, do you think that Abba's correct on what each person's role is? He kind of defines loosely, you know, Annie's always driven. And so I, you know, that's one of them. And then he talks about like, what does he say? Who else? How else does he?
I'm going to say, yes, he's right.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember all the signifiers that he said.
Pierce will never apologize.
Pierce will never apologize, which is true. He doesn't apologize.
He doesn't apologize. And that's Pierce's whole thing. Pierce is unapologetically who he is, which I think is something that, like, yeah. over the course of the show, Troy and Abed, particularly Troy, starts to take as like a thing of like being mm-hmm. a man is being unapologetically who you are. Mm-hmm. And he's a goofball. That's yeah. fine. He's not yeah. apologizing for that. He's not downplaying it anymore. Like, they yeah. do take things from each other. Like yeah. Shirley is always nurturing. Like, yeah, yes, she
yeah,
is.
Yeah. And then Britt is a wild card.
Britt is a wild card.
I like that Britt is a wild card.
For Abed.
Britt is pretty much a wild card from my perspective, which, yeah.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of facets, right? And Britta herself.
Britta introduced herself in episode one as basically a wild card. Like,
well, and she has so many facets. And in many ways, she is working to figure out who she is in mm-hmm. this next phase of life.
Yes.
Like, she's working to make her transition.
Yeah.
To her next phase of life. And that is not an easy one.
Yeah. As a brief aside, I listened to an episode of, oh my gosh, Sort of Brilliant, which I think is a newer podcast where these two hosts sort the characters of TV shows into houses. And I saw that they had done a community one and they sorted Britta as Ravenclaw. And I was like, tell me more. And the way that they explained the tendencies that Britta has is very much like a wild card. Like, she mm-hmm. may not mm-hmm. always seem like she's the most brilliant, book smart person, but she cares about things and she's passionate and she's driven and she's got all these ideas. And she really tries to do them. And so from Ada's perspective, yeah, Britta has been so many different things over the last, you know, obviously like a couple episodes ago, he watched her cover herself in dolls and dance around and get tased.
I love that episode because he didn't watch any of that. He was in the middle of a Mata UN thing. She showed up covered in dolls and he had no, like, they don't have any context.
Like, they legitimately think what is happening.
That's my favorite reaction shot of the study group is when they cut to the study group reacting to what she and Jang are doing.
It's so good.
They have not seen that.
They've literally just been like, they haven't seen Britta since she left in a huff and like she's off doing these other things. And it's so great because they're like,
they have no idea what's happening.
What? what is happening? Also, single greatest storyline, maybe earliest. Oh
my God, I love
Britta
it.
And Chang story. It's so great.
But I like, love Britta.
Of course,
Chang story.
Of course, Abed would think that Britta is a wild card because there's no easy box to put her into, and I think that there's no easy trope, TV trope that she falls into. And I kind of love that he sees her that way. Like, I kind of love that he defines her as like she's pretty open to whoever she defines herself as, and I don't know who she is, but that's cool.
It's interesting they put her in Ravenclaw because I would consider Britta one of the people that could choose.
Yeah.
Like instinct for her is actually Gryffindor.
Gryffindor, yeah.
They did say that your initial instinct is probably Gryffindor because of her bravery, because of the way that
she's... It's not even just because of her bravery. It's because of her emotional impulsivity.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Obviously, I highly recommend listening to it because they're going to go back and they're going to sort the other characters, but they've only done Jeff, Britta, and Annie. And they were not, I mean, Jeff was exactly what I expected. But Britta and Annie were not the houses that I expected, but the way that they were explaining outside of kind of the traditional things. And we'll have to have them on sometime.
Yeah. Jeff and Annie are both.
They almost sorted her in Slytherin.
I would 100% maybe put Annie in Slytherin.
They put
Where do they
Hufflepuff.
End up putting her? Ravenclaw?
Hufflepuff.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. I find that surprising.
Which I was surprised by. And then I listened and I was like, okay, all right. I can kind
of... But 100% Slytherin, yeah. She's definitely ambitious.
They were going to put her in there. The idea of... Annie finding things unjust and that not being okay is one of the primary driving factors of her Hufflepuff. It's like there is injustice and it needs to be fixed and it needs to be solved and I cannot stand it. And also her petty competitiveness can be a negative trait of like buried down of like Hufflepuff, of like her drive and her ambition where we think of it as other houses, but it's very interesting. It was very interesting to think through, and the Ravenclaw specifically made me think of like this episode of like Britta being that wild card that you're like, I do love that they, you know, this season obviously we get to see Britta being her psych major, and that is just such a fun storyline. So I really like that Abed does think that she is a wild.
One thing I've always loved about Britta as a character, I totally understand the arguments of watching her character change and being disappointed by some of the change from where she starts in season one.
Oh, yeah.
To where she goes. But what I love about her changes of character and the wide spectrum that she covers over the course of the show is that Britta, maybe more so than anyone else in the study group, is using college to find herself.
That's true.
She's in college and like Annie knows exactly who she is and what she's trying to do with her classes and her college schedule. Pierce is literally just there to not be at home. Yeah. Shirley is there with a specific goal. Jeff is there with a very specific goal. Mm-hmm. Troy and Abed are there to have a college experience, right? To have fun as college students. But Britta is genuinely the person who is at a point in her life where she needs to figure out what her life is, because her youth was spent being ridiculous, like being a wild card. And then she is now like, okay, I need to like go to college and like do some stuff. And over the course of it, she really does like really try and find herself, and it changes. She connects to some things and realizes stuff that she doesn't know, and realizes parts of herself that are like surprising to her, and reaffirms a lot of things about herself. Like it's fascinating to watch her have like to take college and actually take it as a time of complete self-discovery.
So I
really like that about her character because she's the only member of the study group going through it.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I've never really thought about that before, but you're exactly right. Like she spends the whole series. And again, for better, for worse, I will talk about it when we get there about the way that I don't think the show knew sometimes what to do with her, but you're right. She's trying to figure out who she is. She has a backpack. She's got those little color highlighters. Yeah, highlight probably the backpack. So I like that journey. Love that journey for her. Before we wrap up, give me your thoughts on the show's decision to introduce us to the idea of a darkest timeline, because that is the tag for this episode.
Sorry. Do you have to think about it? Because I know exactly what I think about it.
Go ahead.
What do you think about it?
What I think about it is, it continues the show perfectly doing what it always does, which is, hey, we pitched this as a show about a study group, but it's actually a show about television. Mm-hmm. Because what the show does is it takes these different, it's like, hey, we're going to do a bottle episode about a sitcom trope, and then we're going to step back from that and use it as a character study. And we're going to step back from that and use it as a character study told through a very interesting way. And then at the end of it, we're going to continue to advance the television showness by introducing villains because a television show needs villains.
True.
Last season, it was Pierce. And this season, it's the evil study group. And also, I mean, Chang is going to get us all killed.
Yeah.
But it's a big part of the show going, no, we're going mm-hmm. meta, and this mm-hmm. is what happens in the meta. Mm-hmm. And in the meta of if Abed has the idea of timelines, then we're going to introduce evil versions mm-hmm. right down to we're going to give out the stereotypical television show trope of goatees for evil universe characters. Like,
it's great. And the goatees definitely became a very timely thing. Like them introducing the darkest timeline in season three, and then knowing as a fandom that, like, you know, regional holiday music was the last thing that we saw for 3 months. Like, it was like a thing that was perfectly timed of like, oh, this is the darkest timeline. So we thought back then. Obviously, we were wrong.
We thought years were bad.
We thought that like Community getting pulled from the schedule was the darkest timeline. So funny.
I remember people frequently being like, man, 2019 was a terrible year. Like, oh my God. Was it?
Well, and one of my favorite things I think will always make me laugh about the darkest timeline is the darkest timeline versions of, well, first of all, Britta, you put a wash away blue streak in your hair. I lost my arm. Yeah, exactly. life got dark.
Shirley, don't you think you've had enough of you?
And then for some reason, Troy thought that.
Oh my God. Precious angel baby.
I like that Jeff is furious at Britta for the wash away blue streak, but literally nothing happened to Abed. Abed's fine.
Completely fine. He watched all of this unfold. It just happened.
Isn't he trying to put like the tourniquet on Pierce's leg? Is that what he's even doing in that timeline?
He stands up the little Indiana Jones thing that fell over.
But then he doesn't do anything.
He doesn't do anything.
He went to go help Pierce, does he not?
Annie is helping.
Yeah, Pierce.
I thought they both were.
I think he's just standing there.
I think he's literally standing there, but it's hilarious because of that.
Rewatching it, laughed really hard at Jeff's line. I lost my arm, and you're making fake beards.
It's the moment where they have Troy go, clearly you don't know anything about defeating trolls with his little larynx box.
Troy.
I can't. It sends me over the edge. And obviously this isn't the last time we're going to see them. They're going to become an integral part of not just this season, but the following season. And we'll get there when we get there, but it's an interesting part because of season four, this being in Jeff's head, for at least one of the episodes where we have the darkest time. Like, is there more?
Wait, no, that's this season.
Season four, it being in Jeff's head when he graduates. Cause that's what's in his head, right? He has this face off between him facing off against their alter egos.
The end of this season
is Abed trying to come with a bone saw to the final speech.
Right, but then
season four is Intro to Knots, where we get like a glimpse in the Targus timeline is breaking out of, or Annie's getting let go. And then they come back. Out. But it's in Jeff's head.
Is that season four?
Yes.
It was in season three too. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Yep.
Okay. It's okay. It's all
like
right.
I told y'all before the show, once okay. we hit season three, we kept making the finales that could be the season or series finale. So
it's all, yeah, it's a lot.
God,
it's
yeah, after like season three, four, five, and six all have series.
You're just
finales.
Like, yeah, it's you're right. just a constant stream of series.
So I get them all. So but yeah. you can't ask me 100%. From memory what happens at the end of any of the seasons anymore.
It's fair. It's fair. Do you guys have anything that you would like to add about Remedial Chaos Theory that we didn't already cover? We did cover.
Oh no, let's just watch the episode right now.
I know. I watched it this afternoon and I would 100% just watch it again because it's just really that good. It's
I would good. Like to add that, and I guess I covered this on our episode of it too, but I would like mini pies.
I know. I want mini pies.
You.
I don't think that I would.
You could make your own.
It's not the same as somebody else making a mini pie.
It tastes just like regular size pies.
That you could just make them right. You keep saying this. I want mini pies. You could go upstairs right now and make them because you make them.
It's not the same as somebody else.
I don't understand what's happening.
It's not the same as not having to do it.
Not having to make them. Not having
to make them.
I'm genuinely concerned.
I want them, but I don't want to have to make them.
Yeah.
But they're little. They taste just like regular size pies. I love that. Thank you both so much for being here. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad that we got to do a little podcast collab.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are going to wrap up with our last two questions. I'll ask this question. I'll give people then a chance to find and follow you guys. So as is customary, one of our last questions is, what's one piece of media, be it a book, a TV show, film, podcast, etc., from either a Black, Indigenous, person of color creator and or featuring Black men and women, Indigenous people, or people of color that you would like to encourage our listeners to consume this week?
There's a whole dearth of things, but let me try and pick something that people probably like maybe not have picked up on. Dear White People on Netflix.
Yes.
Or the
show.
I
feel like people have heard of that one.
No, though. Lots of people haven't.
People have, like, I had heard of it, but then it kind of fell off my radar because it had.
So let me bring it back on people's radar. There is both a movie and a television series.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are very good. And so while they're both covering the same characters, the television series obviously is able to get into more, but the movie is starring Tessa Thompson. So I don't know, man, you gotta decide, pick your poison there.
Tessa.
Yeah.
Just one?
You can do more than one.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just gonna rattle off a few that I think people should definitely check out because I have a lot. And I'll stay recent. How about that? I won't even go all the way back to the old people. I'll stay
it's just
recent.
The first thing that popped
I'll stay recent for stuff that a bunch of people miss. Yeah, absolutely shouldn't have. So definitely check out His House on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful horror film, and it. Gets its horror. It's a ghost story, but it's also an examination of trauma, particularly of trauma of refugees. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film, very powerful, very terrifying, and heartbreaking. So you should absolutely watch His House on Netflix. If you have, you should also watch on Amazon. You should check out Regina King's One Night in Miami.
Yes.
It's incredible.
So good.
It's incredible. I'm not even going to say anything else about it. You should absolutely watch that. I could be here all day. Go watch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on Netflix. Go watch Disclosure, the documentary Disclosure from last year, which is about trans representation on television and film. So definitely watch that. If you're in the mood for, I could literally.
If you're in the mood for Tessa Thompson, there's also Sylvie's Love.
Yes.
If you're in the mood for Tessa Thompson and something not as emotionally devastating as the stuff I've already suggested, definitely watch Sylvie's Love because it's probably the nicest thing that I've watched in a while.
So beautiful.
I could pretty much.
Michael
be
posts
here
a those lot are of things on his Instagram, and Twitter about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I could 100% be here all day. I just if you want stuff for BIPOC creators, then definitely follow me in February because that's all I post. But it's usually all I posted as much as I can all year. Anyway, you should just follow me all year.
There you go. I love it. I love Oliver X. I can't believe that I probably was in a weird time of us recording, but I can't believe I didn't wreck this already. But it's a community connection. Over the Moon is a delightful little Netflix film.
Yep.
Ken Jeong, it's got Kathy Ang, it's got Philippa Soo, it's got John Cho, Sandra Oh, so many good voice actors, so much wonderful music. It's such a story, definitely made me cry. Yeah. And
also, if you're on Netflix and you're watching that, then follow it up with Canvas. Canvas is beautiful and will absolutely make you cry.
I also thought of something else on Netflix whenever you said that, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Because Never Have I Ever.
Yes, I'm rewatching I love Never Have I Ever. There's so much good stuff out there, but seriously, like, we will link all of it as we usually do in our show notes. So go check out
20 million things.
No apologies. This is all great stuff. I have found, like, through so many of our guests, like, movies and books and TV shows and documentaries that I didn't even know about. And I'm so grateful for everyone's recommendations always so that I can watch and read more things.
And if people haven't seen the 40-year-old version, it's still the best movie of 2020.
So. It's on my list because both you and Chels have highly recommended that. So it is my list.
It just narrowly beats Sound of Metal for my favorite movie of 2020, but it's the best movie of 2020. 100%, yeah. But you should also see Sound of Metal because Riz Ahmed is amazing. It's a brilliant movie.
Love
it. I could be here all day doing
it. Listeners, we've given you a lot of homework, so pick one, pick more than one, pick all of them. Do with this list that will be in the show notes what you will. Again, thank you both so much for being here. I want people to be able to follow and find you guys, so tell us where they can do that.
Jillian, plugs.
So you can follow our podcast, Welcome to Greendale. If you go to welcometogreendale.com, you can get the link for our Instagram, our Twitter, all of that stuff from there.
Our merch store, our donate page.
All that sort of stuff. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Holy City Fangirl.
You can follow me on Instagram at Michael Smallwood Forever. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Loves Gushers.
Yay. As always, you can find us on Twitter at COMM Rewatch Pod and on Instagram at Community Rewatch. Thank you both so much for being here. I'm so glad when we get to hang out with other community podcasters. You guys are doing such fun stuff. I love that we're on the same track for season 3. Great. Chugging along. Yeah. By the time we finish season 3, I'm sure there will be 5 more community podcasts that pop up. 100%. That's just how this is going. 100%.
Cool. Everybody's starting them.
All the cool kids are starting them.
Luckily, I have no shortage of obscure television shows that no one's into their podcasts about. So,
look, we've already said this is turning into like one of 5 million rewatches of shows. We are 100% going to have you both back because we need to do a Chaos Corner about GLOW. And yes, I'm very excited.
I could talk for a long time about GLOW as a huge professional wrestling fan for most of my life. I have a lot to say about GLOW.
Well, we will have a nice, wonderful, long Chaos Corner, and you guys will be back to do that. And finally, obviously, since this is a Community Rewatch podcast, the last question we always like to ask is, what's one thing you're currently rewatching or something that you enjoy rewatching? I talked about this around Thanksgiving, but I have started doing this for season 9. I'm rewatching How I Met Your Mother. I am fully going to stop right before the show ends. But for some reason, I was feeling like maybe I should give myself some pain and just rewatch the show that I got so angry at for the ending, but like genuinely has really, really good episodes that I just like, it's time to revisit it. But then my sister is doing this, which I think that I need to do. She is watching, because she hasn't seen some of them for the first time, all of the Marvel films in the order in which they take place. So she watched Captain Marvel last night. So I'm like, maybe I should rewatch all the Marvel films in that same way.
The sequential order.
Yes.
The chronological order.
Yeah, the chronological.
I've never done that. That would be an interesting one.
Yeah.
To, like, see
how yeah. that goes. I'm thinking it might be my next rewatch. So how about you? What are you currently rewatching or what do you enjoy rewatching?
There are a couple things that I'm always rewatching. Like, it's my background shows that they're the typical ones, like The Office, Gilmore Girls, mm-hmm. you know, Friends, like those sorts of things. But also The Good Place is now a perennial rewatch because it is
perfect.
It's
perfect.
I also have just recently started rewatching Nashville. Which was
the Hayden Panettiere show?
The ABC soap that was on for a while that was honestly, for characters, amazing. Also for music, amazing. Until it went to CMT. Like, we can have conversations about show fall off and everything like that. But I have started replaying that while I'm working because it's honestly one of my favorite shows from the past 10 years.
Love it.
And so,
love that.
So I'm a playwright and screenwriter, amongst all the other check marks. and I'm currently working on a new screenplay. And whenever I am deep in a writing crux, I like to have on pieces of media that I consider perfect, so that I don't have to like watch them. I've watched them a bunch of times, and then they help inspire me to keep writing. And so it's a whole thing for me. It's a part of my process, which means that I am again rewatching The Wire, which I was probably going to do anyway because I just hadn't in a few months. And The Wire is my favorite television show of all time. It's also my like number six favorite novel. So I'm rewatching The Wire because it's The Wire, and why wouldn't I be? But it's also because I'm currently writing. So
nice.
So that's what I'm currently rewatching.
Very nice. Well, guys, that was Remedial Chaos Theory. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation. This was such a fun conversation about the best episode of the show. And I'm so glad that I got to have that combo with you guys. So,
sure. Yeah.
Thank you for having us on.
Thank you for being here. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Community Rewatch Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts these days so you don't miss an episode. If you want to follow along with our content on social media, you can follow us at COMM Rewatch Pod on Twitter or at Community Rewatch on Instagram. Many, many thanks to Chelsea Eichels for putting together today's episode. We're so glad that you chose to go back to Greendale with us. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.